May it please the Court. Anthony Owsley challenges his sentence of life in prison without parole on two grounds. One, that a national consensus against gross sentencing disparities in crack versus powder cocaine cases was violated by his sentence. And secondly, that the statute under which it was imposed does not permit for the particularized consideration of his history and characteristics. He relies on two lines of cases, those which stem from Woodson v. North Carolina, which recognize that particularized consideration of an offender's history and characteristics is central to the Eighth Amendment analysis of cruel and unusual punishment. And secondly, a line of cases, being Graham versus Florida, which extended the categorical approach to Eighth Amendment analysis of cruel and unusual punishment to cases of life without parole, where previously that approach had been limited to evaluating claims only for the death penalty.
So in each case, the Supreme Court made these extensions, right? The Supreme Court expanded these things.
That is correct.
You're asking us to do that now, right?
I am. There are two, Estelle v. Gamble, in 1976, and the United States Supreme Court said, evolving that to determine whether a punishment is cruel and unusual, courts need to look at the evolving standards of decency that mark the progress of a maturing society. And in the case at bar, there is a national consensus against gross sentencing disparities.
I don't know how you can possibly say there's a national consensus against it when the current statute passed Congress close to unanimously.
The national
consensus against something that has the unanimous support of the House and the Senate? You can't be serious.
I believe, Judge, that when the Fair Sentencing Act was passed, that it was a compromise.
Of course it's a compromise. All legislation is a compromise. It changed from the old compromise of 100-1 to the modern compromise of 18-1. But to say there's a national consensus against 18-1 when it's brand new legislation with pretty close to unanimous support is not a sensible use of the English language.
Judge, we're not arguing that there's a national consensus against 18-1. We're arguing that there's a national consensus against sentencing, permitting discretionary sentences for powder cocaine offenders, but mandating life in prison without parole for crack cocaine offenders.
That's just what happens, given mandatory minimum statutes, when there's a differential ratio. You multiply the amount of cocaine by 18, and you trigger a mandatory minimum that's otherwise not triggered. So you're objecting, in the end, to the ratio. Now, of course, we upheld the 100-1 ratio against challenges. Don't you think we would make ourselves look foolish by saying 100-1 is constitutional, but now that there's a national consensus against even 18-1, it suddenly became unconstitutional?
Judge, again, we're not arguing that there is a national consensus against 18-1. There is in this statute, mandated by this statute, a disparity which is much more profound than any disparity of terms of years. This is a disparity.
This has been in the statute from the beginning, right? The mandatory life imprisonment has been in this statute for a very long time, certainly back to 1984, and it's been easier to trigger for crack offenses than for powder cocaine offenses, and that's been true from the beginning.
That's true. However, this type of mandatory sentence was not subject to review under the categorical approach until Graham came along in 2010. And that's why...
I'm totally lost. The Supreme Court of the United States has already held that it is constitutional to impose a mandatory sentence of life imprisonment for anybody who sells even a reasonably small amount of cocaine as a first offender, right? That's Harmelin. It's never overruled Harmelin. Graham deals with minors. We said just the other day in Cephas that Graham deals with minors, that Harmelin is still good law, and only the justices can overrule Harmelin. Now, if all you want to do is preserve an argument so you can go to the Supreme Court and ask them to overrule Harmelin, that's fine. But we can't overrule the Supreme Court.
Judge, I'm not asking the court to overrule Harmelin. Harmelin was...
If you want to preserve your arguments for the Supreme Court, you really need to tell us that you think Harmelin should be overruled. If all you're trying to do is distinguish Harmelin, then what's going to happen when you file your cert petition is that the Solicitor General will say your argument has not been preserved in the Seventh Circuit.
Harmelin involved the same type of crime and the same type of punishment, life without parole. But Harmelin was decided on a grossly proportionate analysis, which was the exclusive analysis that was available to the courts at the time, 1991, when Harmelin was decided. Now, in 2010, the Supreme Court has recognized that the evolving standards of decency that mark the progress of a maturing society permit the use of the categorical approach, that is, in cases of life without parole, not just in death cases.
Have you read Cephas?
The
argument you're making now was raised and rejected in Cephas. And there's really, as I say, we're perfectly amenable to say, to have somebody say, I think Harmelin should be overruled. I understand you can't do it, but I want to preserve my options for the Supreme Court. If you're trying to make a different line of argument, I don't think you're doing your client any favors.
And speaking of preserving, I have a real tough time buying your argument that this Eighth Amendment argument was preserved at the trial court. How was the judge to know that it was a cruel and unusual punishment argument that was being made from what was said at sentencing?
At sentencing,
he made some reference to deterrence not working, counsel did, and rehabilitation is not being done, but how's the judge to read that as this sort of elaborate, cruel and unusual argument?
At the time of the sentencing, Mr. Owsley was about to be sentenced to life in prison without parole. I don't believe that counsel had to specifically cite the particular provision of the Constitution in order to apprised the court that the objection was founded on cruel and unusual punishment.
It puts a pretty big burden on the district judge to have some real exploration about what's meant in some fairly cryptic words.
But counsel did argue deterrence, rehabilitation, incapacitation, the cost of incarceration. He indicated that Mr. Owsley
like
would appeal his mandatory sentence.
Typical 3553A arguments.
Yes,
anyway,
and
you're in your rebuttal time. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz.
Unless the court has questions, I'm comfortable relying on our brief. Thank you.
Doesn't look like we do. Thank you, Mr. Hartzler. And I think there's not much that you need to rebut, Mr. Cruz, but I want to say that we do appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement.